Welcome to Ghostbiz here on the Business Report. I'm Gary Strubel, and my privilege every week to chat to the finance ghost about what's going on in the markets around us. Ghost, let's start out with a story that's been a developing story for about a year now, and that is the take private of Barloworld, which failed earlier this year. But this has triggered a number of things that are resulting in another potential set of transactions. Perhaps explain to us, what are the technical elements here of the Barloworld transaction, and how does that impact the current businesses?
Hi, Gary. Hello to all the listeners from a very rainy and cold and a little bit miserable Cape Town in the depths of winter here. Hope it's not too bad up there. Yeah, the Barloworld one is an interesting place to start. So it's pretty commonplace to see this where an acquirer comes in and says, okay, yeah, we want to take this company over, but we're actually not too fussed if we can't get all of it. So what they'll do then is they'll start out with a scheme of arrangement. You know, they'll start with what they hope for, because if a scheme goes through, they get all the shares. But then they make allowance for a standby offer if the scheme fails. So they basically say, look, you know, if the scheme doesn't go ahead, then we're happy to make a standby offer to shareholders who do at least want to take the offer. Now, what's interesting is that doesn't mean they get 100%, right? Because it's not like a scheme where everyone is bound by the vote. It's only those who actually accept the offer who would then sell their shares. And what you typically then see is a minimum acceptances condition. Now, the lawyers gave them maximum flexibility by making that minimum acceptance condition 90% from memory, which is the level you need to get to execute what's called a squeeze out, which means you get to squeeze out the last 10% anyway, and it behaves like a scheme anyway. Now, clearly, if they couldn't get a scheme across the line at 75%, they were never going to get minimum acceptances of 90. So I knew that was nonsense. I figured that they were going to try and get to at least 51% to actually go ahead with the offer, because they want to control the asset. And the latest from Barloworld is that they do now have enough acceptances to be in excess of the controlling level. So that means that the deal is going to go ahead, and those who want to accept the offer can accept it. There are a few more regulatory hoops to jump through. So, you know, nothing is done until it's fully done, but at least we know for sure that the parties are not going to walk away here.
Let's turn our attention now to a company we don't really discuss often here, and that's Invicta Holdings. It is a very significant company, and despite very impressive share returns post-COVID from around about 500 Rand to about 3,500 per share, the last 3 years or so has seen some pretty indifferent trading. Is there a story to unlock value in this share?
Invicta is a big business, as you say. It's a very substantial business. They have a lot of stuff, not just in South Africa, but globally as well, and particularly in the industrials space. So very much the real economy, as it gets called. A lot of what they do is the import and distribution of parts. And as you correctly say, on the five-year chart, you saw that typical V-shaped recovery during COVID, or in the aftermath of COVID. And then it's been somewhat sideways since then. And it's a pity, actually, because the business, the underlying business, has got some really good stories to tell, but it is somewhat cyclical, right? They are exposed to the general level of activity in the world, particularly around stuff like manufacturing and cross-border activity. Now, recently, there are some more risk factors in that. But I think when we had a period where interest rates were climbing really, really quickly to try and just bring inflation under control, you know, that did tend to squash some economic activity in large parts of the world. And Invicta, of course, was on the receiving end of that. So they have done a good job of navigating that environment, because it's not an easy environment. And they've been picking off deals along the way. They've done some stuff with their Kianan business in Singapore. They've made an acquisition in the UK. So they're not sitting on their hands at all. And I think that they are hopefully setting up for the share price to start moving higher again. I should mention that I am a shareholder here. This is something that I'm happy to hold over the long term as a bit of industrials exposure. And if you look at the year ended March 2025, they managed revenue growth of 6% and HEPS growth of 14%. So nothing to get upset about there. I think the market just took a breather for a long time. And if they keep growing at that sort of rate, the share price at some point has to move higher, right? It can't go sideways forever when we're seeing HEPS growth in the mid-teens.
Now, a stock we have discussed before, and mostly due to the continued buying of one of the shareholders, and that is Lighthouse and Des De Beer, who we've kept track of his buying Antix. He certainly seems to have an endless supply of cash. There's a good story happening at Lighthouse at the moment. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, there are essentially two things you need to remember about Lighthouse. The first one is that they buy a lot of properties in Iberia, so that's Spain and Portugal. And the second thing is that, as you say, Des de Beer just loves buying shares in Lighthouse properties. Basically, they get out of closed period and Des hits the bid and he hits it hard and he just keeps buying up shares. And it's a good business. You know, it really is a good business. And they are finding some pretty solid deals in places like Spain. So their overall direct property portfolio in Europe has got a good story to tell. If you look at the 5 months to May 2025, sales in that direct portfolio were up 8.6%. And I think a very important number here is that footfall, so that's literally just the number of human beings going into your mall, was up 4.6%. Now, that is a lot better than we are seeing in South Africa, for example, where footfall numbers have been pretty sideways, not least of all, I think, because of the adoption of e-commerce. People are going to the mall less and less and less than they used to. And the landlords have to be quite careful with this. Now, the average basket size has been trending higher, so it kind of comes out in the wash. But I do think that things are changing at pace in the retail property market, and it is something to definitely keep an eye on. Another thing that I'll just touch on in Lighthouse, which I thought was pretty interesting, is that their vacancy rate increased quite a lot from December 2024 to May 2025 because of the closure of a trampoline park. And that's with the national operator on that side facing challenges. And look, sometimes you have to be careful drawing links between things, but you know, the birth rate is something that people are speaking about a lot. There are just fewer kids around than there should be technically. And that means a business like a trampoline park with big fixed costs, etc., you kind of wonder if that's the asset you want to be in right now. And it's been replaced at Lighthouse's property there by a national fashion retailer. So very much a sign of the times there.
Was a good idea as well to look at the big macro stocks, banking in particular. Absa released a voluntary update for the 6 month ending June. And there's quite a lot of big news, of good news rather. Now, Absa obviously a bank that has enormous market share and very diversified specialities. Tell us more about the good news at Absa and how does that reflect on the broader economy?
Absa is a good place to finish because it comes after a flurry of banking updates, actually. The Absa one is a voluntary update for the 6 months to June, and it does reflect some trends that we're seeing across the banks at the moment. So the main one is that net interest income is struggling. This is because demand for credit is quite muted at the moment, and interest rates have come down slightly. So that means that net interest margin is under pressure. Not good news for NII, unfortunately. It also means non-interest revenue is then doing the heavy lifting for them, although heavy lifting is a very relative term here, because it's only high single-digit growth, which is obviously not amazing, but it is at least better than what they are getting on the NII front. Operating expenses, a little bit of a question mark there around expenses, up mid-single digits. Cost-to-income ratio expected to move slightly higher. This tells you they are struggling with efficiencies, and there is some margin pressure on their pre-provision profits. However, here's the thing that really boosts their numbers, and that is an improvement in the credit loss ratio, down from 123 basis points in the comparable period into the top end of their through-the-cycle target of 75 to 100 bips. So it's improved by, call it roughly 20 basis points, maybe a little bit more. And this has resulted in mid-teens earnings growth for Absa and a significant improvement in their return on equity from 14% to 14.8%. Now, the issue is that improvement in the credit loss ratio is not going to happen every year. It's like a step change, basically, that has boosted their numbers. And shareholders can't rely on that. They end up relying on the underlying growth in the business. So good news for Absa, but also kind of bad news in that it shows that the banks at the moment are actually struggling to really find growth in this environment.
All right, guys, that's what we've got time for today. Remember, you can get this episode and all of our previous episodes wherever you pick up your podcasts, on Apple or Spotify or Android, or you can go to nova.com.na and download our episodes there. We love hearing from you, so feel free to pop us a note on socials or alternatively to our email address, that is tbr@nova.com.na. We'll be back next week with more from The Finance Ghost.